Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Listen. Welcome to the Shoot the Shiitake podcast with me, Father Leo Padalinghug, a Catholic priest on a mission to bring people of all different backgrounds together to learn, to love, and accept one another. Even if we disagree with each other, we have to be willing to listen to each other as God does with us and as God intends for us to do. This won't be a podcast that gets into the technical, the deep, or the lofty things of our faith, but rather makes it more practical simply by listening to each other. And this week, I have the pleasure to listen to Dr. Gregory Bataro, who is the director of the Catholic Psych Institute and the founder of Catholic Mindfulness. This is a super impressive conversation, especially as we're all dealing with difficult things in our life. And if you want to support our podcast, simply go to my website, platinggrace.com, and click on support, where you'll get premium content and other special perks. But for now, please enjoy my guest, Dr. Gregory Bataro, as I get into a deep dish discussion as we shoot the shiitake. Dr. Greg, thanks for shooting the shiitake with me. This is really a pleasure to have you on. I read through your book, The Mindful Catholic, and I'll be honest with you that the one thing that kept coming to my mind was the word mindful. You do realize that for many Catholics is seemingly controversial, and I just want to get your take why you think mindful could even be in any way controversial.
Yeah, I've heard that a little bit here and there. I've got some feedback on that, so it's definitely... It's a controversial thing because like most things in life, there can be some good and some bad involved. And we have something that's actually rooted and grounded in something that comes from a Buddhist practice. And so mindfulness, to give a little history, as we understand it and know it today, goes back to 1979 when a Buddhist medical doctor by the name of Jon Kabat-Zinn introduced a program to help his clients who were suffering from chronic pain. And he knew that his practice from his Buddhism could be helpful to alleviating some of the suffering for his patients due to the amplification of their physical pain because of what they were doing in their mind.
And what do you mean by what they were
doing? This branch.
Explain what do you mean what they were doing in their mind, because I know that this is a real part of it all. You know, when people hear the word psychology, they think mind, but the word psyche in Greek literally means soul. So I just kind of want to make sure I understand the difference between mind and soul.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, such a great and very complicated question.
It is. That's why we're shooting the shiitake, doctor.
That's great. Shooting the shiitake, and we can bring in some like heavy anthropology and metaphysics and some mystic philosophy. Well, basically, you know, we're psychologists, we're talking about the way we think and the way that how we think affects our feelings. Mm. So we're talking about, you know, thought process and cognitive faculties, and then our emotions, our affect, you know, the way we feel about things. That's typically the realm of psychology.
Yeah.
As a Catholic psychologist, I also study the overlap between that and our spiritual life, our spirits, and the way that we commune outside of the realm of our physical place and time, where we are here with our bodies. Because we, you know, having a soul obviously introduces us to that interface to encounter God outside of here and now. And the psychology typically kind of just looks at the here and now facet of the human person. A Catholic psychologist, secular psychologists are starting to recognize the value of spirituality, but in really undefined terms.
Yeah.
See that it's real.
That's an interesting thing that you say. I don't want to compare you to other psychologists, but do you think you kind of like have an advantage because you actually believe in the soul? I mean, it's like...
Oh, it's amazing.
Tell me about that.
I tell people all the time, like, I have an unfair advantage over the entire field of psychology. And if you think about it, it's so crazy. But we psychologists are proposing that we are going to help you become a better version of yourself.
Yeah.
And Catholics are proposing that we have the blueprint for how God made us and for what. So it's like, you know, it shouldn't be too hard of a leap to figure out if I'm going to be a psychologist and try to help people fix what's broken and become the best version of themselves, why don't I find where the blueprints are for how we were made in the first place and use that in my practice?
Okay, so...
And it's like all of a sudden it's this undiscovered secret where it's like, you know...
Yeah.
When you do that, it works.
Yeah.
It works better than how anybody else is doing it.
Now, first of all, I want this blueprint, okay? I want this blueprint. But secondly, why would it be a controversial word, this mindfulness? Is it because it's rooted in some sort of Buddhist principle? And why can't we take some of the things that are good for Buddhists and apply it to Catholics? I mean, I'm still kind of stuck on that because I did a talk on mindfulness, and I can't tell you how many people kind of... Actually, it was just a blog post, I think, that I put out, and I just got a lot of controversial things. It was like, you're opening it up to the devil. And I'm thinking, really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Am I really?
Sometimes it's really a lot of fear-based misunderstanding and very sort of simplistic ways of jumping to conclusions. But on the other hand, what I tell people is I get it. I understand why there's concern because there are certain things that we have to be on guard against. Not necessarily, I don't think that the mindfulness practice is opening the door to the devil. But what I do think is that the Buddhist worldview, there are ways that it's radically different from a Christian worldview.
Interesting.
And there is one specific principle that is most important in this topic, which is the oneness of all being. And what Buddhists believe is that the self as an individual is actually an illusion, that we are not individually different from all being itself. There is no actual difference in persons. There's no God because there's no separation between us and anything else that is. So this fundamental foundational Buddhist worldview can at times enter into what is popularly understood to be mindfulness practice. Now, it doesn't have to be. It's not part of the original 8-week protocol developed by Jon Kabat-Zinn as an intervention. But because it's become such a fad, there are Buddhist practitioners that in the process of the exercises leading you to understand how to get control of the way your mind works and essentially make it a better version of itself, which we can talk more about that if you want to, how that works. But
yeah.
Basically, they slip in little phrases that can be disorienting. So you might be listening to a mindfulness exercise on YouTube, and if it's a Buddhist practitioner, and then they might say something like, sense your oneness of being with all that exists and realize that this is what's real and there is no self. You know, so like all of a sudden you're like, wait, what?
Wow. Well, first of all, you said that just like you said that just like a professional mindfulness teacher. You even had the right to. I was actually starting to fall into a daze as you were speaking.
There you go.
No, but I mean, I think that's where we have to remember that pantheism is still a heresy. And I think that that is kind of what we're afraid of, is that we can start to think that we are God, and that, you know, that this uncreated, that this world has kind of like a living soul, almost like a Mother Nature kind of thing, and we're going to be one with
sure.
It is kind of freaky, and it is kind of weird, but even just like the world, you know, paying attention, that's kind of what my mom and dad would always say, you know, just like be mindful. I mean, my mom and dad use
right,
that
it's,
term.
Right, it's awareness, it's attention, yeah.
So let me ask you just a basic question, and I'm going to go back to this blueprint you know, because I want to be mindful. When it comes to being aware, you know, for my listeners, what do you think we need to be aware of? What would be some of the essentials that we need to be paying attention to? Because to be honest with you, sometimes I'm more aware of, like if I'm praying, for example, I'm not even paying attention to the Eucharist or the crucifix or a saint statue. I'm literally paying attention to what I'm going to eat tomorrow, you know, or like
right,
what I'm
exactly.
gonna, what I had for breakfast this morning. Tell me about what are going to be the essential things to pay attention to.
Yeah, so you know, God made us to be really excellent at living in this life, in this world, as it is. And he gave us our five senses to plug us in to now, the time and place where we are, the here and the now. So when we smell a smell, we're smelling what's real now. When we see something, when we hear something, these are inputs that we're getting through our body about the world in this moment in time. And actually, there's a whole other thing we could get into, I'm sure, with mindful eating and mindful cooking, because that's a huge aspect of mindfulness. But there's, you know, some smelling those smells, tasting the food, and seeing who's in front of you and listening to their words. Like, this is us with our five senses plugging us into this present moment. And what mindfulness does is teaches us how we actually have this sixth sense, which is our imagination. And it's not just a movie about a kid who can see dead people. Like, the sixth sense is actually...
I got a little scared for a second. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's our imagination. And yeah. And why I call that our sixth sense is because it's another way that data is being presented to our brain. So our five senses are presenting data to our brain about something about reality in this present moment. And then our sixth sense is presenting data to our brain, but it's different. It's not tied to the present moment. And, you know, I kind of go off on a tangent here with Catholic mindfulness to explain why that is. I think that is based on this blueprint of our humanity. God, who is outside of space and time, wants us to be able to commune with him and encounter him. And the only way we can do that as materially created beings in this material world is by having some channel, some bridge that can take us outside of space and time. And so when we use our imagination for prayer, for meditation, for moving us towards contemplation, then we are stepping outside of this time and place, and we are so we're meditating on the rosary or the decades or the, you know, something from scripture. And it's like, it's almost like we're putting ourselves there.
Okay. I mean, this doesn't sound too different from the Ignatius Examens or the Ignatius form to like meditate or the introduction into even contemplative spirituality.
Exactly.
You know? So you're saying that we've got to be aware of just our senses, you know, like what we smell.
Exactly.
So let me just get practical. I'm sitting in chapel.
Yep.
I'm sitting in chapel and I want to pray better and I want to pray in a more mindful way. You're saying I've got my five senses and then I've got this sixth sense that can kind of take me out of myself and into a more divine reality that is beyond space and time. What does it look like exactly? Do I have to like measure my breathing and just say, I smell incense or I smell, you know, fried chicken? What exactly do I need to do? You're probably psychoanalyzing me about the food thing.
That's pretty awesome.
But I mean, I guess what should I be doing if I'm trying to be more mindful, especially to God?
Yeah, so plugging into the present moment. So So the understanding of those five senses and then the sixth sense of imagination is a setup for sort of like understanding how this whole thing gets hijacked.
Wow.
And then the practical way to get ourselves back in control of ourselves. It gets hijacked because the long and short of it is we're built to avoid danger. And when there's real danger in the present moment through our five senses, you know, if we're in chapel and all of a sudden the candle catches the altar cloth on fire and we're seeing it happen and you're smelling the smoke and you're hearing the crackling of flames around you, you're like, you're activated into your fight or flight response. That's called the sympathetic nervous response of the brain. And it does a bunch of things in your body, one of which closes up your mind's perspective. Your focus goes right around, it closes in on one idea of getting to safety, and you don't think about anything else. So we lose our open-mindedness and we go into a very specific fundamental or singular focus of safety, avoiding threat, solving the problem, getting out of danger.
Interesting.
And so in the five senses, that's really helpful because if we're actually in danger, we need our brains to do that. But because we have the sixth sense, which can come up with things that are dangerous that are not in this time and space, we're imagining dangers that actually affect our body. So just like what happens during a nightmare, you're imagining a threat to yourself, and it's having a physiological effect on your body, because that's the power of the imagination. It can be used for good, drawing us deeper into a prayer, and it can also be used, hijacked by the body and the brain, to keep us, quote unquote, safe from an imagined danger. And because we have something called a negativity bias, which means it's a helpful survival instinct to always be looking for the dangers that might not actually be there, because, you know, the two people standing next to each other, one of them is good at assuming danger, the other is not, then that's a survival instinct. Like, that person that is looking for all the dangers is probably going to live to talk another day about it.
Yeah, it sounds like the Trump derangement syndrome. But that, no, I'm kidding with you. That's not what it sounds like at all. But I yeah. do, I do have to figure out what you're, I mean, doctor, you're incredibly smart. You've studied all of these things, but you were also a missionary. You worked with the Franciscans, I understand, and you kind of lived this evangelical poverty. Now, I want you to kind of apply what you just said to the homeless person who is kind of saying to you, you know, like, all I want is just some money, you know, and how is this person going to be a mindful person? You know, what do you,
right.
what do you, because that's sometimes me. That is sometimes literally me. I am just as destitute spiritually as the homeless person with the sign asking for something.
I agree. I feel the same way. This is exactly, so all that backdrop and lead in is to bring us back to the chapel.
Yep.
You're sitting in chapel, you're smelling the fried chicken, you're starting to think about dinner.
Yeah.
And now you realize, like, because the imagination is taking you out of the present moment, you simply need to do something to bring you back to the present moment.
Okay.
And it's very simple. It's as simple as paying attention to one of your five senses.
Huh.
Because your five senses are necessarily in this time and space. They're the here and the now.
Hmm.
So if you simply feel your body, you could feel the pew underneath you. You can smell if there's, you know, an incense or whatever it is. You can look and see the colors, the icons, the candles. And so you're tuning into your senses. You're necessarily showing your brain where you are here and now. And what that does, if you're safe, which 99.99% of the time, you're not in any sort of physically threatening situation, literally in that moment, your brain is going to come out of that anxiety response. Your brain is going to come out of the fight or flight response and open up to see the big picture, to think clearly. You're going to have full access to the full faculty of your mind and your brain. And so then you're going to be able to see, okay, I'm here to pray. I am focusing on this rosary, this mass, this whatever. And you're going to be more yourself. You're going to be plugged into that moment more, because you've brought yourself back to the present moment.
Okay. So coming back to this understanding of the blueprint, can you tell me exactly what that means? This is the blueprint to be the best version of ourselves. I always say it's our call to be a saint, you know? I mean, but that just is so beyond people. They don't even realize they're called to be the best version of themselves, which is the way God made them, which is God's holy child, a saint in his eyes. So
yeah, absolutely. Not just a saint, but to be like Jesus.
Dang, now that's, you just took it to another level, like, doctor. What is going on?
That's right.
That's so way bigger than I thought.
This is the blueprint. You know, God's looking down and he's seeing us and we're a mess. You know, we fell it in the Garden of Eden. We're living in sin. We're all over the place. We keep trying to come back to him, but then we mess up again. And he's looking at us and he's like, you guys are a mess. He's like, you know what? I love you so much. I'm coming down there. I'm going to come show you how to do this human thing. And so the incarnation is God coming into our world in Jesus Christ. He's saying, look at me. This is what it is to be human. This is how you do it. Follow me. Hmm. And it's like, he's blowing up everybody's expectations. You know, like, oh, I thought, you know, we're supposed to, you know, you're going to take over the world. Nope. I thought you're going to, you know, bring political success and whatever. Nope. I thought you're going to this. In fact, what the heck are you doing? You're eating with the sinners.
Yep.
You're reaching out with compassion to the woman caught in sin. You're like, what is going on here? You're eating on the Sabbath and you're this and you're that. He's constantly, but the whole point is that we needed something different because we weren't getting it right.
Huh.
So the blueprint for how to be human is found in Jesus Christ. And in fact, there's, you know, the church documents say this, and in the church document document says it's, you know, Christ reveals man to himself.
Wow. Wow.
He shows us how to be human.
You just basically, you basically are just letting us know what the gospel said. I mean, how interesting that the gospel and psychology could go hand in hand. Who would have thunk? You know, who would have thunk? But I
who
do.
Would have thunk that?
But I do have to ask this, because, like, I think now, right now, you're probably taking notes. And believe me, if I could be lying down on a couch, I would, and you would have a heck of a time with me. But as a patient, that is, you know. But like the idea of, I think I'm kind of normal. I don't think I have many issues. I don't think I have, you know, any emotional or mental bag. I mean, I have all of that, but to a manageable degree. How easy is it for someone who does have, say, trauma, who does have things like diagnosable bipolar, can they still practice mindfulness as well? I mean, and the reason why I ask that is because in the confessional, doc, I'm just going to be very honest with you. I think some of these people do not need absolution. They need drugs, like a psychotropic drug, to keep them stable. And they need a counselor and they need something else. And part of me just wants to be like, man, you pay attention to what you're saying. You're dealing with a whole bunch of issues here. Like, how can mindfulness help people who do have psychological problems and who do have mental issues?
Absolutely, yeah. One of the most diagnosed and predominant disorders is anxiety disorder. Mm. And so most of us are working with some level of anxiety. But on some level, and, you know, I'm painting with broad strokes here, but, you know, there's this fundamental disposition that we have as humans to run away from difficulty, to avoid suffering.
Okay.
And it's an avoidance tactic in our brains that ends up causing us to run to many of the disorders that we suffer from, whether
really?
It's an addiction, whether it's a mood disorder, an anxiety disorder. A lot of these things are built on our displeasure, our discomfort at sitting with life as it really is now.
Oh.
And so mindfulness is constantly bringing us back to say, it's okay to be where you are right now. You're safe where you are. And of course, this is where the Catholic piece comes in. I mean, the fundamental difference between Buddhist and Catholic mindfulness, you know, Buddhist mindfulness says it's okay to be safe because, you know, the self is an illusion and danger itself is an illusion. The Catholic version of mindfulness says it's okay to be safe and to sit with where you are because we have a Father who loves us and who has proved to us he's going to take care of us no matter what. And he even conquers death itself and he's here for us. So it's okay to be safe. Whatever you're going through, it's going to be okay. And okay. that's why it's all right to be in the present moment, and that's going to help you to overcome whatever it is you're struggling with.
All right. So here's the issue, though. You know, much of what you said, and I'm fascinated by it. It has to do with this fear. I love the fact that St. John Paul's, you know, earliest words were "Be not afraid," just a reminder that we all deal with fear. But come on, let's be honest. When we're trying to introduce Catholic mindfulness and we're saying, now look at the cross of this bloody dead man hanging on it. I mean, that would give a lot of people fear. Couldn't Jesus have picked a different image for a kind of hope? What would you say to that?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think that's part of him being real about it. He was saying like, I actually get it. I'm going to go where you are. I'm going to go into what you're afraid of. It's precisely because we're afraid of that he's going all the way, because that's what he's healing us from with his resurrection.
Huh.
It resolves that fear and it brings resolution to the fear because he's resurrected from that.
Wow.
He went that far. And I think that's also why he had those wounds still visible in his resurrected body. Like after the pain was gone, the suffering is gone, he's resurrected. But he wanted us to see, like, hey, look, these are the real wounds. Like, I was really the guy who went there with you.
Yeah.
I was really the one that was killed. I was the one that was that bloody. But this is what that leads to now, because I've opened up this gate and this channel, this bridge for you, that you can walk through this door and follow me.
That's beautiful. That really is beautiful. And I you know, Dr. Pataro, I'm learning so much from you. I feel like I need to pay you. You could bill me later for all of this. But you know, I'm going to just confess something. Part of me really just is fascinated by what you know. But if I really want to be mindful, I need to know who you are. I mean, like most of what we do as public Catholic people is we talk about what we know and we sometimes forget about who we are. How much of you do you bring into your practice? And like, tell us a little bit more about you. I mean, you're a husband, you're a father, you're an author, you're a speaker, you're a professional psychologist, you're all of those things. But like, how much of you, and even in your own brokenness, because we've all heard this phrase before, you know, like the people who are trying to help people the most are the ones who are most broken. You know, I mean, like,
yeah,
even as a priest.
I've definitely been there. Yeah, and I think when I was 17, my parents divorced. It was devastating in my life, and I went on a whirlwind, a tailspin of trying to figure out who I am and what life is about. And I found my faith, and then I spent 5 years discerning religious life, and I thought I had the answers. I joined the Franciscan Friars of Renewal. I was there for 3.5 years, and during that time, I discovered that I don't have a religious vocation. And so just when I thought I had all the answers and I'm living this virtuous life and I'm praying 5 hours a day and I'm with this amazing group of men, and it is actually a really beautiful life, I was also kind of getting a gut punch, feeling like, what the heck? Like, why? Like, this is hard. This is too hard.
Yes,
like, how do I
it
not
is hard.
Have the answers? I'm doing everything I could possibly do. And I still feel a little bit kind of miserable, actually, at the end of there. I was like, I'm messing up my life. So it sent me in this deeper journey, this deeper search. I worked with Father Benedict Rochelle. He helped me understand my wounds. He helped me understand how to pray. You know, the Catholic mindfulness is really a psychological manual for applying the principles of abandonment to divine providence. And that spirituality is what Father Benedict taught me how to put into practice. Not just a nice spiritual book, but like, how do you actually trust God to the point that you have peace and live it in your life emotionally, psychologically? And so that's where I came from in learning how to do this. And I left the Friars with joy, and I went to grad school. I got my doctorate. I met my wife my last year before finishing up, moving back to New York and starting my practice. And now this is basically the passion of my life, is I want to share this with others and help people understand that it's actually not supposed to be this hard.
Huh.
But
now,
we need to have a faith. We need to have a religious education and formation in the faith that's fully human. And I think there's so many ways that the church gets that wrong, because we sort of over-spiritualize things or sort of make things really saccharine. And we miss the depth of our humanity.
Oh, for sure. You mentioned the word formation. Now, I would suspect that part of your professional approach to helping people is because you've went through a formation program. You know, one of my books is trying to create families to understand that parents' job is not just simply to provide and to teach, but to provide formation, which is truly an integration of these different forms of wisdom for that unique individual. Now, the formation that you experienced as a missionary, as kind of like a Franciscan friar, and even from the divorce, how are you able to help? Do you only help Catholics, or do you also work with non-Catholics as well? Because basically what I'm asking is, you've got a Christian tradition, you've got a philosophical background, they're going to people who don't have any of that. How do you help them?
Yeah, that's the beautiful thing about this, is that the blueprint is based on basic humanity. It's not based on any specific faith formation or anything. So, you know, we literally see that God became human to show us how to be human. And when he showed up, it was the right answer for everybody and anybody, Jews and Gentiles, didn't matter the religious background, basically saying, this is the key to happiness, be like me and follow me. So that's what I've applied to my life. And I can meet people wherever they're at. And I work with people wherever they're at. It doesn't matter whether we agree on all the issues, whether they're Catholic or not. But I can help figure out what the next step towards their best version of themselves looks like. And it might not be all the way. It might not be what makes, you know, everybody in the pews comfortable about how to live your life. But it's one step in the right direction. That's my goal, is to help people walk one step at a time.
Okay. Now I'm going to ask you a question that has to do with moral theology, and but it affects the soul, and therefore kind of in a way it affects psychology in your practice. How do you deal with sin? I mean, because if we're just being the best version of ourselves, and if we're practicing mindfulness, and of course we're constantly sinning, one could think that, oh, at least I try to do this. I mean, what role does sin play in the life of psychology? Because I know what it is in the life of moral theology. What does it play in the role of psychology?
Yeah, that's a great question. As soon as you said moral theology, I was like, oh, I'm a little nervous now. That we're
hey, listen, Doc, I mean, the only thing that's missing is that we're not sitting at a bar with a beer. That's the only thing missing in this conversation. Because I'm trying to milk as much information without having to pay for it. Really, that's all.
I'm going to start checking my watch here. Yeah, I think, so again, this is another out that I get because of being a Catholic psychologist. And so the sort of the big picture answer here is that all truths of all the different sciences and studies and facets of different kinds of wisdom, as you said earlier, they all derive from the one source of truth. There can be no contradiction. Mm. So as a psychologist, in the therapy office, I am careful to know sort of like what's the dynamic of this particular relationship. Now, I do have Catholics to come, and sometimes there's an overlap with spiritual direction and therapy, and we can talk about sin and we can talk about the moral life, but there is a way to make a distinction, because I don't believe that sin is good for us psychologically. So if something is bad for us as a human, if something's sinful and morally wrong, it's going to be psychologically wrong. Mm. And if I can see it through that lens and translate it into that language, then I can still help somebody to understand how a particular behavior or mindset or mentality is actually not going to be what leads them to the best version of themselves. And it doesn't have to be a moral conversation.
How hard is it to be just a dad and a husband? I mean, do you kind of put the psychological language in your husbanding and in your fathering?
That's a great probing question. I should probably have my wife on the line.
Well, exactly. Well, because listen, I mean, I've met some psychologists and they have children, and I'm like, dang, I can see why your children has issues. I mean, like it was really something to see that. But you seem a little bit more kind of rooted, maybe even humble. I mean, I don't know you really well at all, but I think your answers are expressing a little bit of a more of a humility because of the acceptance of human brokenness, and you understand that.
I think, I wish I could say I was more humble than I am. I think there's a real difficulty to keep the distinctions, to not play the role of the expert when it comes to things like, you know, family formation and stuff like that, especially with my wife. And I'm a work in progress, so I'm working on that. I love what you said about the family, you know, the role of parents as formators.
Yeah.
And because of that, I do take it very seriously. And I completely agree. So like using this knowledge and expertise and experience, I do really try to bring that into the family, not as a psychologist, but really respecting or having reverence for my role as a father. And in another way to look at it, I really see myself as a father to my patient.
Wow.
And there's an easy connection there.
Wow. I mean, and here's why I asked that, because I've actually met some priests who do not have a psychology degree, but they all seem to pretend to be one for the other. And even like, it's just awkward. It's kind of uncomfortable. And I think what you're trying to do is establish a familiar relationship, because that familiar relationship should lead to more of a natural relationship of loving one another and helping one another. And that's kind of what I see here. Now, with your next projects, besides just continuing to help people and hopefully getting yourself to heaven, what do you have in mind here? Are you going to be having like these mindfulness clinics and such like that I see in the secular side of things? Are you going to do that?
It's a good question. I have a couple of different projects. One thing is we're bringing Catholic mindfulness to the Catholic school system. And so we've developed a K-12 curriculum where we're providing an alternative, because mindfulness is kind of becoming a big thing in schools, but a lot of it is the Buddhist version of it.
Mm.
So we're creating the Catholic alternative. We've already launched a pilot for our K-12 curriculum. So that's one thing that's on the docket. And then the other is, I've created an online membership website called Integrated Life, and it's basically using the principles that I've worked out through my experience and training to figure out people need more than just good ideas, good content. There's so much good content online, but we need more than, I mean, even a podcast, you know, we need more than just a book. We need more than just a good YouTube video. Mm. So I've created a website where we're bringing together the content, but also with coaching, which is a kind of mentorship through the website and the community itself to support and encourage one another. So by bringing together coaching content and community, that's the integrated way to actually help people move the needle in their life. So that's the sort of next big project that we're working on at Catholic Psych.
Yeah, that's really amazing. You know, originally when we were trying to set up this interview, I wanted to just meet with you in Midtown Manhattan or somewhere close to downtown New York. And you mentioned that you don't go there. Are you just doing that because you're trying to avoid crazy things that will threaten your mindfulness? Because New York is such a... I completely understand why we're doing this interview on the phone, really.
Yeah, actually, it's such a disaster. It's so funny. I used to have an office in Manhattan. We still do have an office, but I used to work in an office in Manhattan. And I have another therapist who's down there now in Manhattan. But when I was there, I had a lot of people coming from out of the city.
Yeah.
And I noticed, like, we would spend the first 20 minutes just like calming down all the anxiety that arose from coming into the city. So I'm like, why are we doing this to ourselves?
Oh,
why am
God.
I coming down here? You're coming down here, like, wasting our time.
Dude, you'd be rich.
You'd be built. Yeah, exactly. Build a whole business model on that.
That is so true. No, that is really true. Now, before I let you go here, and I can't thank you enough for taking the time to be on the show. First of all, I want to send you my newest book, because if it can help families with understanding how to keep formation as a family around the dinner table is really the premise, but during the different generations of family life, from like when you're feeding your babies mashed peas until when they're feeding you mashed peas and everything in between. You know, I mean, I still think that we need to be mindful to eating together. I mean, like my mom calls me sometimes. She says, aren't you the priest on TV that talks about family dinners? I'm like, yeah, woman, leave me alone, right? She gets it. but I do want to learn how people, I want people to learn how they can find you. Where can they find you? First of all, your book, The Mindful Catholic. You've got some great forewords and you've got some great endorsements from Caggiano, Bishop Caggiano and Peter Kreeft, which is pretty awesome. It's on from Beacon Press. You've got other books out there too. Tell us a little bit about the things that you can offer people and where they can find it.
Sure. So my wife and I, in practicing this with our children, wrote a children's book called Sitting Like a Saint, Catholic Mindfulness for Kids. And that's where we use the lives of the saints as vehicles for helping parents, giving them exercises that they can actually practice with their kids. So it's kind of fun. Get the parents to calm down, much in the same spirit of what you're doing, I think. And we want to bring the parents together with their kids. Parents come to us and they're like, you know, help me, you know, calm my kids down. We're like, okay, well, let's talk.
Maybe,
why don't you take a breath? Yeah, exactly. Well, this way we get the parents to actually sit down with the kids.
Nice.
They do the exercises. They're reading the exercises and doing them themselves. And it's this great moment of shared experience of God's peace. Another book that's out there is just did a consecration actually to Jesus through St. Joseph. So you can look that up, consecration through St. Joseph. And then besides that, I'm online at CatholicSites.com.
Mm-hmm.
And this online community that I mentioned is integrated.life.
Integrated.life.
So those are the best ways to find me.
Great. And before I do let you go, I have one last question I ask this of all my guests. You know, we've never met formally, familiar with your work, but how can I, as a Catholic priest, help you, Dr. Bataro?
As a Catholic priest?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's just, well, how can I wanna... Father Leo, a Catholic priest, you know, how can I help you?
You know, I would say that this, I don't know if this is the kind of answer you're looking for, but this is something that's,
well, I'm not going to psychoanalyze this, doctor. Whatever you want to say is perfectly fine with me.
Great. So priesthood is very dear to my heart, and mm-hmm. I work with a lot of priests that are really struggling. I think one of the biggest difficulties in our church is a misunderstanding of the vow of celibacy, of the life of celibacy. That's part of the priesthood in our Western church.
Nice.
And when I talk about this with priests or with anybody, I talk about the co-educative nature of marriage and celibacy. In other words, there's something, John Paul II talked about this, that celibates learn from married people about life, and there's something that married people learn from celibates about life.
Hmm.
And the thing that celibates are meant to be teaching married people in the church is what a life of undivided attention and focus on God actually feels like and looks like. And so what I would say to you, if you want my most honest answer,
yes,
is share with me what your celibate prayer and intimacy with God looks like.
Wow.
So I can learn from that.
Well, that's absolutely stunning and beautiful, but I can say just from a quick answer, it looks like having my own bathroom all the time, and that's a real great gift to keep the sanity going. I'm sorry for taking your beautiful answer into some of the most human realities.
I see cleanliness on another level.
Oh, no, I really am going to meditate on that, this co-educative nature of the celibate and married life, because I think you're absolutely onto something, and I think I want to maybe even come back to you and talk about celibacy, because, heck, we struggle with it in the church. It's all it's plastered all over the news, right? And I tell people—
And it's getting trashed right now.
Oh,
it's getting trashed.
And totally trashed.
If we don't point out the beauty—
Yeah.
And I feel like as a married man in my vocation, the best way I could support you in your vocation is to ask for and expect from you to like live up to the actual beauty of your vocation, which is beyond, obviously far beyond the way it's getting trashed right now, but to like
point
us both in that direction of like, what's the point of all this? It's not just because you're like free to do podcasts any day you want to, or like, you know, travel around without any obligations or like all this nonsense. There's got to be more to it than that, right? That's what I'm looking for.
Oh, man. Well, I you know what? You've just kind of set yourself up for another interview. That's all there is to it, because that would be a great thing. But, you know, I'm going to actually tempt you and say the only way that we're going to do this is if I can actually meet you in person and share a meal with you in New York City. All right? So that's going to have to happen.
I'll brave the anxiety, and I'll come down to the city for you. I will totally do it.
Oh, I love this. Well, Dr. Gregory Bataro, author of The Mindful Catholic, Finding God One Moment at a Time, was my special guest here on Shoot the Shiitake. You can learn more about him at integrated.life. And please do look him up, because I think mindfulness is what our church needs and what our people needs, because it's what God wants to give to us. And when I come back, I am going to share with you my carryout order and what I learned from this amazing conversation with Dr. Gregory Bataro. I'll be back in just a moment. And welcome back to my carryout order after having this deep dish discussion with Dr. Greg Bataro. I want to thank him. It was a great conversation, and he didn't even bill me for it. But I guess that's the Catholic missionary side of him. How impressive was he to be able to kind of not sound like a weirdo psycho person, which a lot of people think when they hear about counseling, when they hear about psychology? People immediately respond with a little bit of fear. They don't want to do it. And part of it is because it is always going to uncover things that we don't like about ourselves. And so his mention that oftentimes people get emotionally hijacked because of that sixth sense of imagination. We feel like if we were to uncover something negative about ourselves, that we have to kind of fight or flight, flee or defend ourselves. And oftentimes, if we're not practicing mindfulness, it could make us very defensive people. I've experienced it. I mean, I'm a pretty public person, and you know, I took a break from social media for that very reason. It was so negative, with people just constantly throwing attacks. And because they don't like my priesthood, they don't like the way, they don't even like this podcast because they think it might be too racy. They want me to rather call it Shooting the Breeze with Father Leo. And that's just kind of, no, that's not me. But the point is, if you are caught off guard and you're not practicing Catholic mindfulness, it's real easy to kind of be emotionally unstable, or at least emotionally not effective. This is true for not just social media stuff, but for interpersonal relationships as well. I don't think people are very mindful. And I know that the word mindfulness is controversial in and of itself. And I can understand why, because it's kind of rooted in Buddhist practices of types of meditation. I know that Eastern nations practice a form of mindfulness that, again, comes from a religious form of meditative prayer. But that doesn't mean that Catholics don't do the same thing as well. I mean, if you're praying the rosary, for example, you should be paying attention to the mystery, not just simply to how many Hail Marys have I said so far. So mindfulness should not be a negative word for Catholics, because the fact is, we love it. You know, being paying attention is being mindful of what's happening at Mass. I mean, isn't that why they rang the bell during communion, so that people would pay attention? Oh, the priest lifted up the host. Let's pay attention to the presence of Christ in the Eucharist. Let's pay attention as we offer each other a sign of peace. It's deep. It's very deep. And so the reason why I think a lot of people don't do it is because it does require you to get into the psychology of a person. And that means literally the logic of the soul, not the mind necessarily, but the soul. Psyche means soul. So the idea of people afraid to even talk to a psychologist, to be honest, as a priest, I think when people come to me for confession, they can certainly confess their sins, but what they really need is not just a sacrament of confession. They need to go talk to a counselor. They need to actually talk to somebody about some of the issues and the problems that they have. Because if not, then we kind of get into a rut in learning about who we are. And we think that we know everything, and it doesn't keep us humble. And so mindfulness is really an opportunity to be humble. And why? Because a humble person knows that there's always going to be danger in their life. You know, the sixth sense of imagination will create literally a hijacking of our emotions and make us feel as if we're in danger. And not that we should always feel that way, but if we are humble, we will know that, guess what? Though I walk in the valley of darkness, I fear no evil, for you, Lord, are with me as my shepherd, always walking before me to protect, to guide, to lead me. And so if we are not being mindful of God, we're not going to be rooted in our humility and our humanity, and therefore we're going to not be the most effective people emotionally. So there's just so much that I got from this conversation, and I hope you got something out of it too. Make sure that you find out where Dr. Bataro is in case you want to learn more. Just Google mindspirit.com. That's integrating psychology and faith, and you'll find Dr. Gregory Bataro there. And once again, if you enjoyed this program and want to support our efforts to bring conversions through very easy conversations that get into deep stuff, simply go to my website at platinggrace.com, introducing you to our new support system, which is basically going to be part of our academy, where we're going to have Plating Grace as a place where you can go and interact with a deeper community, and more importantly, get awesome access to premium content, like even deeper dish discussion with even more fantastic guests. So thanks for taking the time to listen, and I hope you enjoyed this. Again, for the support, platinggrace.com. And between now and the next time we shoot the shiitake, stay hungry.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Have you ever been put on the spot and asked to explain or defend Catholic teaching on sensitive topics such as abortion, same-sex marriage, or the Eucharist? What to Say and How to Say It is a straightforward and practical resource by Brandon Vogt, best-selling and award-winning author of Why I Am Catholic and You Should Be Too. He offers essential tools for articulating even the most contentious aspects of your Catholic faith with clarity and confidence. You can get a copy of this important new book at AveMariaPress.com. Use code TALKFAITH to get 25% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.